Blog Talk Radio.
Wow, the year is already flying by. It's the 17th of February. First of all, let me apologize to all those of you who were chiming in at noon. We had some technical difficulties, pushed us back by about 17 minutes, and it just didn't seem prudent to do truncated shows in light of the sensitivity of the topic. So for those of you who are anxious to have something to share, the number is 619-639-4747. Again, 619-639-4747. If you've got a perspective or an incident, or maybe you just want to, you know, basically share your story with those of us in the World Wide Web and the worldwide social media world, we're again adding voices and certainly adding faces to what has been a dark issue for far too long. And that issue, of course, is domestic violence against women. And it also transcends, because again, you're affecting women, that means you're affecting children, you're affecting families, you're affecting communities. And for the last 4 days, we have been hard pounding on the pavement, in the social world, in meetings, left and right, bringing awareness to the challenges of domestic violence. As many of you that will write me letters or send me emails saying, yeah, man, I appreciate the work, please understand, we as men, we are the work. You know, a lot of these problems would, and again, I'm not going to turn this into, you know, an hour of man bashing. That's not what this is about. If anything, it's about self-assessment and self-improvement across the board for all men. So we got some things lined up for you. Yesterday, you got a chance to check out American Epidemic. You all love that. Ask for that again. There's still a tremendous amount of love for Bailey's Ball and Chain, so maybe we'll re-rack that at some point today. But, you know, we want to basically allow this really to be. Now, the last 4 days, we really kind of opened this up, and we were asking for the women to really, really be active. 619-639-4747. Most of you, you know, again, I don't know your situations. I don't know what you're in. I don't know what you're involved in. So, you know, again, I'm not going to begin to try to grasp, you know, what may be going on in your world. But you don't need to be afraid anymore. And I guess that's the first message. Stop being scared. Wherever you're at, whatever you're in, stop being afraid. Stop. We're no longer going to be silent on an issue. If you are the neighbor or a friend of someone who is involved in an abusive relationship or an abusive situation, you need to assist. You need to be part of the resolution and not, again, your silence is part of the problem. And I need you all to understand that. This needs to be as big, as powerful, as active as any other cause in society today. You know, some of you thought that I was kind of picking on the Susan G. Komen Foundation for Breast Cancer Awareness. They get a ton of money, and there's a ton of awareness, and we all do the walks, and it's great, and it's wonderful, and they raise millions and millions of dollars. And then there are nonprofit organizations like the one in Atlanta, Men Stopping Violence, who have to fight like crazy to get funding. Is this an indictment of who we are as men? Because I think it's safe to say that if men stop putting their hands on women, you know, it's not going to clean it all up, but it's going to make a pretty good-sized dent in this whole process. So to the brothers out there who can hear me today, it's got to start with us. We got to look in the mirror, because that brother looking back at you, if he's putting his hands on his girlfriend, if he's emotionally or holding back to her, if he's socioeconomically abusing her by not giving her the resources, again, and we'll go through all that again today. You know, again, it's become a bit of a protocol that we add some definition and some understanding to what exactly is going on in so many homes. And, of course, we somewhat paint it with a broad brush. And I guess I do that, if nothing more, to try to cover masses in that regard. But I need you to understand something. You know someone. You know someone that's in this situation. I say that one in three women will be the victims of abuse in their lifetime. One out of every three. I don't need to get on my soapbox when I see one out of every three. That means someone that I've come across in my lifetime has needed a way out, maybe needed assistance, needed an ear to listen to, needed. They were in need. And I shared with you all yesterday the song that was done back in the 60s by the Crystal. The song was called "He Hit Me and It Felt Like a Kiss," and how nauseating that made me, how angry that made me to know that five sisters recorded this song, a song written by Paul Spector, who's not shy to the world of the music industry. And I understand it was a different time. I completely understand that. But when did that be okay? At what point was it just okay? He hit me and it felt like a kiss? Seriously? 619-639-4747. Give me a holler. Talk to the hardest working man in internet radio. You know, some of you called me the angriest man in internet radio. I am not mad at the brothers. But I am calling all brothers right now, every grown man under the sound of my voice. Do you not realize that these young men, the children, are watching us? They're watching us, brothers. They're watching how we carry ourselves, how we treat our women. If you're living an alternative lifestyle, that's your business. They're watching how you're carrying yourself as a man. Do you walk around with peace and love in your heart, or do you walk around angry and bitter? And do you take it out on the ones you claim to care about, the ones you claim to love? Look in the mirror, man. Look in the mirror. I've probably watched more clips and more videos of boyfriends or husbands abusing wives, and the one thing that always shocks me and gets my attention is when the child walks around the corner and the child has a mirror in his hand or her hand. And dad looks in the mirror and he sees himself and what he's doing to mommy. Brothers, if the thought of that doesn't at least make you take a pause and take a step back and reassess your decisions and your choices. I was told by some really good friends recently, hey, man, I know what you're trying to do, but you're not going to heal the world. I understand that. I understand not everybody's going to want to jump on board, and there are brothers out there that will, you know, grasp in some level of denial. That's a fact. It is what it is. But if I can get one brother, one God-fearing cat in this world, I don't care where you're from. I don't care about your race. I don't care about your lifestyle choices. I don't care. If I can get one guy to not put his hands on his partner, to not raise his hand, so that 911 call isn't necessary, to maybe choose a conversation as opposed to a fist, then maybe we save a family. Maybe we save a couple of lives. Maybe, just maybe, another child doesn't lose a father to a poor decision. Maybe. But the challenge rests with us. Women have been fighting this battle forever, well beyond, you know, the 60s and 50s and 40s. They've been fighting this. And it's time to add voices to the sorrow that we know exists. And maybe some of you out there really don't quite grasp it. Maybe you don't understand it. Maybe a clip like Ball and Chain is what you need to hear to remind you. Maybe, you know, First Apartment is what you need to hear to get it once. Maybe Kindred Spirits is what you need to hear one time. Well, I'm going to go deeper today, Friday, February the 17th, 1242. I want you to listen first and foremost today to Pauletta's story. I will preface this by simply saying, get your mind right.
Dear Aubria, as a child, I watched and learned, but never had I imagined you were watching and learning too. Just like me, you learned that love came with a price. Like a waterfall, it came crashing down on us, soaking our generations, drowning us, and submerging us beneath the surface of reality. You were beautiful, intelligent, talented, and confident. You had dreams and aspirations and pursued them with strong ambition, always reaching for the stars. But you seemed to give up on your dreams. I saw the confidence slowly abandoning you. I recognized the sign because of how your stepdad made me suffer for so many years. I heard the fear in your voice as you explained how the man you loved followed you around, watching your every move, and how he made you feel unsafe and afraid. I miss seeing you on the holidays, at our cookouts, and at the dinner table on Sundays. I missed your voice when I didn't hear from you for weeks. This was totally out of your character. I became more and more concerned. I called your closest friend, but they too had not seen you in a while. My social butterfly was no more. When you called me tearful in the middle of the night, distressed and distraught, I felt your pain. I was tearful too because I loved you and wished you only happiness. I did everything I could to let you know it didn't have to be this way. Like I said, I recognized the signs. Then you called one day and sounded so excited, and I was excited too about the plans to start a new life without him. And I was proud as you spoke with a renewed confidence. When we said our I love yous and our goodbyes, I didn't realize it would be the last time I would hear your voice. I'll never forget that cold December day in the hospital when the doctors told me that there was no hope. My greatest fear had come true. My heart was breaking as I watched your young life slip away from me. You were only 21 years old. With a single gunshot, the man you once loved and trusted, and who had taken everything, your confidence, your family, and your friends had finally taken your life. It's been nearly 6 years, and I still can't believe you're gone. I miss my beautiful songbird, the smile and the voice that would greet me each day. I long to embrace you, if only for just a moment. But your voice still speaks to me and through me. With love and kisses, Mommy.
Powerful stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Powerful, powerful, powerful. That is Pauletta's story. A letter written from her mother regarding the daughter who unfortunately lost her life to domestic violence. I am humbled by the stories, and as a father of a 15-year-old girl, as someone who has spent at least the last 20-plus years of his life, 25 years of his life, being the father to two boys who may not have been my seed, but certainly were my kids. And to be blessed enough to have a beautiful, talented 15-year-old daughter at this point. I know what it is to have to fight that fight and to question so many times friends and people who come into her lives. And yeah, I called it almost a term of endearment when my daughter would think I was so overprotective. And that's fine. I guess I'd rather have that than to have this, you know, mommy and daddy don't care about whatever, you know, she does. That certainly is not going to happen in this household. But all that said, the choices our children make are critical. And, you know, this family, my family has been touched much like, you know, Paula's story in that same regard. We lost Kim to domestic violence some years ago. And when I heard that, it just kind of rolled right back at me hard. And, you know, I get emotional about that. And the sad thing is the numbers show that you know someone that's in that same situation or has been through that same situation. And I want to hear your stories. I want to give you a platform today to talk about maybe your own personal experiences. And I know some of you might be at work and you can't pick up that phone and make that call. And maybe it's not a good look for you to get a little emotional at work. But that's not all of you. Some of you have been through quite a few things, and maybe your testimony, your story might do something to bring someone else out, give someone else hope. And a lot of that is what this whole week has been about. Now, I do have some announcements to give you later on in the show about what's going to go on, not only with this show, A Time to Heal, but also with the sports show we do on the weekend, The Fastest 60 Minutes of Sports, and how some things are going to be in a bit of a transition period in a few weeks. But for right now, I just want to focus in on you and focus in on what your needs are. And certainly, as we often do, we want to give some definition to the causes here. You know, you've heard me reference not only Men Stopping Violence in Atlanta, you've heard me reference Joyful Heart Foundation. Now I'm going to reference, you know, what I think is really kind of amazing. The Southland Healthcare Forum Men Against Violence organization came together for its first couple of training sessions last weekend. And we'll work now together to create its actual entity within the Southland area, in the south of Chicago, in the Southland Chicago area, to do this work, to go out here. And this is going to be a little bit different because instead of just focusing on women, we're certainly going to give voice to it, but we're going to focus on the brothers. We're going to focus on the men, regardless of where you're from, regardless of your financial status, regardless of your race. None of that matters. We just need our men to make better decisions in relationships. That's it in a nutshell, okay? So the mission becomes to heal, to educate, to empower, and to stay committed to providing the most up-to-date information, resources, and stats pertaining to, you know, domestic violence, child abuse, sexual assault. It is a priority to continuously educate ourselves and to share this knowledge with everyone who supports, you know, anyone who comes looking for help, partners, and the community at large. And in this case, the World Wide Web is my community. So we believe survivors need and deserve access to the expert resources that are either in their local community, wherever they may be in this world, And we want to provide survivors with the information and links to national and local organizations that can receive the appropriate support so they can get the support that they need, you know, on their journey toward this healing process. No, it's not easy. And no, it's not cheap. So if I show up in your church one Sunday, you know, to talk to you a little bit about the work, please understand, this is a life calling. This is a mission. This is not something that's going to be, okay, we finished this project, let's move on to the next. No. As long as one man raises his hand to his woman in an act of violence and with an attempt or desire to hurt, the work will continue. My generation's behind me. I'm telling you right now, I know you can hear me. 619-639-4747. I know you can hear me. I'm coming after you. All right. To my brothers in the high school system right now, we're going to go there. We're going to go to middle schools. We're going to go. Yeah. And again, I know you guys hear me out there. I'm going to need your assistance as well. We're going to go into the highways and byways. If we don't give our boys the foundation and fundamentals they need to make good decisions at a young age, you can go visit them all you want to a 26 in California, Chicago, or your local lockup, wherever your community may be in this world. I'm tired of doing that. Not when they didn't have that, you know, not when, you know, doing something illegal, doing something violent was in their mind their only option, because it's not. It just isn't. And this behavior, this domestic violence, the behavior purported by so many of us brothers has got to stop. And it may take the 1 second it just takes to breathe, to walk away. Now, understand something. When someone walks away, sisters, if that man is willing to walk away, don't reach out and grab his arm. Talking about he needs to listen to you. No. Brothers, when that sister walks away from you, don't grab her arm. You upset, you're angry. Don't do it. You don't need to. Sometimes it's nothing more than the space you need to allow someone. Space. Maybe you walk away. Maybe you go chill for a half an hour. Maybe you go find one of your partners or boys. Vent to them. Come back with a better spirit, a humble heart a little bit. If you did something wrong, here's a concept. Man up to it. Because there's nothing manly about putting your hands on your woman. Nothing. I also want to share some cues, triggers, and culture today. Some things we got from some of our friends along the way. And some teaching tale cues that when tension is building, what to do, what not to do. And gosh, we got so many things to share with you guys. You know, it's a shame that we've only got an hour to do this. Anyway, we'll get to all that fun stuff pretty quickly here. Yesterday we shared the Behind the Wall, the Tracy Chapman song, which a lot of you really thought was impressive and wanted to hear that again. And I'll take liberty right now and give you, for those of you who can't wait to hear Ball and Chain one more time, all right, we'll get you that Bailey Ball and Chain. Matter of fact, let's do that now. And yeah, that'll work. That works, Mike. All right, very good. All right, we'll do the Ball and Chain now, and then we'll be right back at you to share more information. This is Bailey's Ball and Chain.
I look in the mirror. I don't recognize this reflection. Thinking back, I got lost in this projection. Slowly reminiscing about the trials and tribulations. Jesus saved me. Covered by his blood, I'm now safe. An innocent being turned into a craze. The flesh abused through an obsessed rage. And so I told her, love isn't a mile run. So if there's a run, it's because he's running from you. Love shouldn't be dangerous, hence love didn't exist. You see, you created this illusion. Regardless if the abusing was intense, you gave him the love that made sense to you. Drawn with the ink of eyeliner, cover-ups, illuminating lips. The sway of the hips is what kept him on focus. Nobody noticed the smile made up, the hesitation to wake up. Those nights where the bottle wouldn't leave your hand, needed nothing but hold it higher. For you to drown in the sense of something so disgusting. Didn't care if your lust was just because you were drunken. Didn't care that that cough you had could have been something else. That those Newports would prove that one day, sooner than later, you would die. Didn't care when those shadows laid hands and penetrated you while half past dead. Didn't move a muscle when you cried and wished to die with a knife in your hand so high. Don't want to be here anymore. 4 years, like a ball and chain tied to a beast. I watched you every single day, wake up and want to sleep again. Rather live in the Alice in Wonderland than to breathe the same the air as him. The swelling on your face spoke a thousand words. Why'd he hit you and you still wanted to be his girl? Instilling fear that it would hurt like a serenade of a singer. Because manipulation was at its greatest. You see, I'm staring at this reflection, not recognizing this projection. I was susceptible to either side, but the balance was losing grip, slowly slandering down into the depths of the devil's pit. That alcohol was my hydration. That reefer was my motivation. See, when I was in control, I seemed to always stumble. So I gave myself a reason. Get drunk, get the fool out, and blame all the mistakes on you. Kept you from your friends and from your passions. Was like a ball and chain tied behind bars you were held captive. See, in my mind, in order to survive was to make sure that I died. Each sip was a step closer. Each sip made me feel nothing. Numb to the hits that were placed on my face. The tug of war with my hair didn't hurt as much. This body wasn't being cherished. It was getting prepared to be buried because then I felt it was worth none. Seated in a bathroom, hiding from the rage, praying for somebody to save me, holding a knife beside me, lifting up my sleeve, my Bible telling me to cut me. Carved not deep enough was the word love. I wanted to see it because it wasn't around me at all. Fear not, for I am with you. Something inside me told me to no longer be afraid. I knew I could die from my next move, but in my eyes there was nothing more I could lose. Even though I was at my weakest, I felt stronger than ever. I was giving myself away, powered by my Lord, conquering the devil. And so I said, I'm done. It's over. I need to go. Confrontation was in heat, but his grin was cheek to cheek. Smiles and it's okay was on repeat. It took a split second for blood to drip, landing in the arms of a woman whose strength took control. See, in that moment, my mother was empowered by God's strength. This little lady wasn't afraid of this beast who made her daughter bleed. She looked dead in his eyes and now it felt defeat. So as I'm staring at this reflection, thanking God for this blessing, because even though my teeth need to work and my nose and jaw will never feel the same, I'm thankful for that day. The ball and chain was broken.
That is amazing. Ball and chain. Again. Incredible, incredible experiences. I want to talk a little bit while I have these few minutes before we get a little more into some things about understandings. While it's easy for us to see that a child is not at fault for a violent dynamic in the family, it is much more of a complex issue for that child to understand. After months or years of having their belief reinforced that they are the cause of violence, it is both an academic and emotional process to internalize an entirely new belief system in which the child is innocent, or your children are actually innocent. Sometimes what stays with a child and resonates as painful is different than what we might imagine. Children often describe in vivid detail the loss of favorite toys, worries that pets will be hurt in retribution, and the loss of their normal daily structures. These losses may receive less time and attention than needed to process as the family struggles with the basics of survival, access to food, and a safe bed for the night. Like any of us trying to understand how someone can do this to their own family, children also struggle with a host of mixed feelings related to having a violent caregiver. One day they feel safe and loved, and and the next day they're fearful for their lives and for themselves, their siblings, their parents. This constant duality makes achieving normal development milestones, such as differentiation from their parents, more painful and challenging. Carefree daydreams about becoming ballerinas and firemen in the future are replaced with loaded worries about becoming violent themselves or becoming a victim to others. There's also the desire to love and be loved by both parents, and memories of good times and bad. Children may feel guilt for having happy memories and loving the violent parent, anger at both parents for the losses they are feeling, and a great deal of confusion at their own feelings and behaviors. Many of you have children right now. Some of those children are products of abusive relationships. I'd like to hear your story. Some of you I've talked to, and some of you, again, I know you're a little gun-shy or you're fearful, or maybe you're in a situation where, you know, picking up a phone is not something you can do right now. That's okay. You can shoot me an email. You can find me on Facebook. You can hit me on Twitter, at VinLove, V-I-N-L-U-V, 1207, you know, or as a hashtag, VinLove, 1207. You can find me on Twitter as well. If for nothing more than to give you an outlet to get things off your chest, to know that someone is listening to you without judging you, 1-800-799-SAFE. That's the National Domestic Hotline phone number, 1-800-799-SAFE. Share that. Share that with someone who needs it. Some years ago, you know, a friend of the show created a document, Domestic Violence Cues, Triggers, and Culture. And I want to just read you a segment of what he wrote, because it talks really about some of these cues and triggers. I don't know that it gives you enough to necessarily look for, but if for nothing more, it gives you something to certainly think about. Let's talk about types of intervention in domestic violence cases. Can range from a phone call to transporting and housing a victim. Intervention certainly can include calls, interviews, assessment of the degree of severity or injuries, safety planning, transportation, alternative housing, or domestic violence shelter, referrals for counseling or other services, as well as obtaining an order of protection. And I think that's where I was really kind of headed with that. The order of protection. Many of you have had orders of protections, and they meant absolutely nothing. In the past, domestic violence workers obtained judge's protective orders on just about every case. But research has shown that it's not always the most effective way or, in some cases, even advisable. The worker must explore with the victim what effect the order will have on the perpetrator. In particular, will it further enrage him or her? Will it make the violence worse? Will it be ignored? Certainly on the majority of cases, the judge's order will be a huge deterrent. On the more severe cases, it may make behavior more devious in doing acts of domestic violence. An order of protection is only a piece of paper, and it only works if it's followed. Calling the police will work, whether one George has an order or not. Though having an order of protection does give more options of what to do when the police are called. I don't know how you feel about orders of protection. I know some of you that have done these orders of protections and it's worked for you, and others have tried and it just exacerbated your situation worse. Crucial issues are crucial in domestic violence cases. The social service worker who's doing this, again, and if this is you just trying to be a nice guy, and maybe you're not necessarily working for a social services organization, but you're just trying to help, you must know the culture out of which these parties originate, and if you, as best you can. What is the status of the woman or the man in that culture? Are they equals? You know, or is he or she considered the other person's property? Some cultures allow the man to physically beat his wife. Conflict comes if she is expected to stay home with children, but in the new culture, she wishes to go out and go to work. Her own family may tell her husband it is good for him to beat her to keep her in submission. I'm not going to identify the culture, because if you can hear my voice, you know who you are. Immigration actually plays a huge role in some domestic violence cases. It does. If there's a criminal complaint signed for domestic violence, the perpetrator, maybe not legal, can be deported and not allowed to return. Or later, when they want to extend their visa or obtain citizenship, there are some problems. There's something to think about. A little bit of a different spin there. But again, a serious issue no matter which layer you're on. And uniquely enough, there are so many layers that this can spawn from, if you will. So why did he raise his hand to you? Was it peer pressure? I don't know. Was he angry about his job? Did something go awry in his world? You were married for 7 years and you never once saw this coming. You never knew a problem existed. And all of a sudden, he came home one day, drunk. And he took it out on you and took it out on your on the children. You didn't know what to do. I mean, we've alluded to the movie enough throughout the week. And from what I understand, people are renting enough and watching it all over again to see how, you know, Mitch and Jennifer Lopez's character dealt with that throughout the movie. Powerful stuff. And you find out real quick that it takes more than just you sometimes to get those things resolved. But no, they can be resolved. I want to play this for you. I called it my first. Story about a young lady who ventured out on her own at a very young age, meets a guy, you know, she's got a child and she does some things. I just want you to hear her story. I called it my first.
I moved into my first apartment today. The bedroom is bigger than the one at Mom's house. There's room for Ricky's crib and all of his toys. At work today, this nice guy came in to buy cigarettes, and he asked me out. I'm picking him up after work. Mom said, "What kind of guy has a girl pick him up?" Mom said it would be hard to find someone who wanted a 19-year-old girl with a 2-year-old son, but Mike wants us. Mike rearranged my apartment today, taking down my new curtains. He hung up dark plaid ones. He replaced my picture of flowers with a picture of a ship. Mom asked if Mike had moved in with me. I said, "I think so." Mike came home drunk and angry. I'm sick of him degrading me and pushing me around. Mom said it's a sin to live together, that we should get married. Today, I'm Mrs. Michael Darren Harold. Mom is so happy. Why is he so evil? I try so hard. I walked away from him today, but he grabbed me by the hair and pulled me down the steps in front of Ricky. He made Ricky stand over me and sing with him. Fatty, fatty, 2x4, couldn't get through the bathroom door. I'm down to 98 pounds, and he still says I'm fat and ugly. I tried to call the police because he wouldn't stop hitting me. He tore the phone out of the wall, threw me into the car, and drove me to the emergency room. He said I was having an emotional breakdown. What does he want from me? Mom prayed. She said her God showed her that Mike was a caterpillar transforming into a butterfly. Mike and I are back together again. Maybe the ninth time is the charm. This is our first vacation, and the ocean is beautiful. Mike's being nice. He hasn't even yelled at me for 2 days. Today's Mike's birthday. I left him again, but I'm back. Mike crawled up on the porch roof of my new apartment, begging to come in. I said I'd call the fire department to get him down, but I let him in. He promised he just wanted to talk, and then he'd leave. But he raped me. He threatened to kill me if I moved. Ricky was screaming and crying. Then Mike went into Ricky's room and started hitting him. Mike dragged him past my bedroom door into the bathroom to wash the blood off of his face. Ricky kept crying. "Don't worry, Mommy. Don't worry. I'm okay." He hit my son. He left, and he's never coming back. Mom said she's glad it's finally over. This is the first time I've ever agreed with her. Today is Ricky's 8th birthday. He asked me if Mike was coming. I promised he wasn't.
Second, we're a safe haven for people, and so the hospital itself is a place where people can feel safe and comfortable. And the opportunity of hospitals to do assessment, to do screening, and then to offer opportunity for resources is something we have a great opportunity to do.
The prosecutors can't do it alone, the police officers, the doctors, the service providers cannot do it alone, but if we all work together and work together as a team to address every need and aspect of the victim's situation, then it is a game that we can win. Because when we work together, we make a really formidable opponent.
Be smarter than I am. Just because you have degrees, or you make a lot of money, or you don't think you have a way out if you have no money, there are support groups. There are people that will help you find a way out. And anything, any place, is better away from that environment.
If we could paint a picture of a brighter future, one thing that we definitely have to do is we have to detach the stigma of domestic violence. I think that there is this persona that domestic violence is what happens to other people. It doesn't happen to normal people. It doesn't happen to, you know, middle class people who go to their jobs and get educations and just live their lives, but we know it does. And it happens everywhere. And people need to learn to speak out. We need to empower women to ask for help, to seek help when they're in these situations, that we will believe them, that there are places they can turn, whether it's our victim shelters or calling the police, calling 911, going to a trusted friend, a neighbor, the local clinic, the hospital. But how can we stop it before it happens? Or when we start that cycle, how can we intervene in the middle of it? That's when we're going to have a brighter picture of tomorrow.
It's going to continue to be a journey, and not only for me, but for my children, and perhaps for their children. But we've got each other, and God willing, we're here together to work through it.
I saw that this was just going to destroy my life, going to destroy me, that I had to turn it around and do something positive. And that's when we started working with the shelters and setting up scholarships.
Let it go. And move on, because life is too short and you deserve the best.
Windows to my soul, a doorway to my dreams. It's a little bit of everything. It's a mixture of, you know, my hopes, my dreams, my desires, and my aspirations, and I vision myself doing these different things, you know. I do believe in the concept of visualization, you know. If you can see it and you think it, and as long as you vision yourself doing something, it's going to happen. I truly believe that, you know. I really, really do. Realize that you are a strong woman, and you want someone who's going to encourage you and love you and make you want to pursue your dreams. That's important. It really is important. So just get out. Move on. You know, better things are going to happen, but in order to start something new, you have to do away with the old. You have to do away with the past. And in order for good things to happen in your life, you have to get rid of the bad first. You know, it's scary at first because you don't know what you're going to do. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay to be confused. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be scared. But most importantly, you're still alive to feel that way. So that's important. At least you're still alive and you have another day to make a change. But you have to start today. You have to. I am now 35 years old, so it's been 10 years since my experience. Everything is falling into place for me. Great. It's great.
You remember when we couldn't say the word breast? The shame attached to a woman going in and talking about breast cancer, you know, 20 years ago was terrible. You know, so we've really got a lot of work to do to be able to go in and talk openly and honestly about abuse so that women can hear that it's okay to talk about it so we can move ahead like we have on breast cancer. That'd be wonderful. I'm going to live to see that happen. I think I am.
Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all. And when they arrive, They say they can't interfere with domestic affairs between a man and his wife. And as they walk out the door, the tears well up in her eyes. Last night I heard the screaming, then a silence that chilled my soul. Prayed that I was dreaming when I saw the ambulance in the road. And the policeman said, I'm here to keep the peace. Will the crowd disperse? I think we all could use some sleep. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all.
Okay, so in May of 2010, I went on a cruise to Cozumel, Mexico with a friend of mine and some of her friends to renew her wedding vows. There were five of us that kind of hung out together. And over the course of talking to each other on the boat over 4 or 5 days, I found out that out of the five of us, four of us had been victims of sexual abuse in our childhood. And, you know, statistics tell you it's one out of every four. I think it's way more than that. And so I ended up writing this piece called Kindred Spirits about how many of us there are and just what that is, what that's like. So this is Kindred Spirits. Kindred Spirits would be a nice way to put it. Survivor would be a proud title to attach. But the honest admission of abuse victims is more accurate, and I've met more of these sisters than I care to admit these days. Beautiful but self-conscious, confident while full of doubt, wanting to be found attractive while managing this thing of balance misdirection, because we always associate the two with impending destruction, and people wonder why we're crazy, slightly off balance, growing suspected for having to live our lives. When childhood bedrooms become war zones instead of safe havens in which to launch our dreams. When mothers can't be our confidants because we wish for no one else to witness our shame, so we suffer. Some of us quietly. Others in the shouts and screams of our aggression and independence. It's no wonder we leave you confused. See, we don't come with identifying markers. There's no way to tell one from the other. They don't hang signs around our necks for easy identification, but God, sometimes I wish they did, because I think the sheer number would astound you, maybe even confound you, because we outnumber the innocents by a mile. We are the majority, wishing to be the minority so that we can enjoy their privileges of having bad touch, only be the letters written on a teddy bear diagram in first grade, and mirrors not becoming reflections of battered little girls who into damaged grown women we have been made. Why can't these be our experience? Why were we selected to be a part of this multitude who survived while permanently disabled by our abuse? I'm sick of asking these questions and all the others like them, because there is no answer other than this. This is your life. One of adversity and strife. And while I would have wished for you something different, a little less emotionally significant, I pray that it's made you stronger, tougher to break. At least then I know in the end you'll find your way through the twists and turns of heartbreak, the loneliness that comes from a lack of understanding, and the feeling of abandonment when those you thought would be there leave. While it may be tough and someday seemingly impossible to achieve, keep pushing, diva. Hold your head high and plant your feet. And the next time adversity comes, remember your fairy tale, the stuff of grown woman dreams, and eventually you'll find peace.
The victims of domestic violence can be anyone, regardless of past family history, income level, or education. The victims of domestic violence are people who thought it could never happen to them, but in fact, it has. She is your sister, your mother, your best friend, your cousin, your coworker. These are our stories.
My friends tell me to just leave. I know they care, but I don't feel like I can confide in them anymore.
People are always shocked to hear I escaped an abusive, violent marriage, that I had to run for my life after living in a hell of despair and fear for several years. No one can imagine a smart, successful, independent woman like myself in that situation. But there I was,
trapped in my financial vulnerability and commitment to my son's well-being. I know it takes two to make a marriage, and we were so happy, and my family loves him. Would they even believe me? Even if you think you're too smart or too tough to ever get involved with an abusive guy, chances are you'll never see it coming. There was no doubt in my mind about how hard it would be to survive. He was clear about hurting anyone else in my life who tried to help. He was very clear about my dad. He would remind me that my dad had a bad heart and he would not be able to live through the turmoil. He was charming, kind, and well-educated. We were married for 7 years before it started. I couldn't do it anymore. I would rather be dead. That simple. I would rather be dead. Dead was better. It was safer for my children if I stayed. I knew that if I divorced him, he would be alone with the children for extended periods and I would not be able to protect them. So something tragic has to happen to my daughter before the courts will intervene? Okay, I thought, so I'll be the supervisor, so I stayed, because the thoughts of the revenge he would take towards our daughter were unbearable.
My child was murdered by my abuser.
My child is now torturing animals, since he has been spending every other week alone with my ex-husband.
My daughter killed herself after the court forced her to go live with her father. Domestic violence is about control, power, and fear. It is about the women in this book, and it is likely to be about someone you know or will know. Buy this book today and read these true stories and learn the real reasons women stay in abusive relationships. A percentage of the proceeds will go to benefit victims and survivors of domestic violence.
One twenty-one for your afternoon. Thank each and every one of you once again for chiming in on A Time to Heal. For a lot of you, I know that's some of that's reflective stuff. It's hard to hear that. Some of you, that's a lot of what you shared with me. The book are The Voices of Women. You can find that book at your local bookstore for anyone who wants to certainly go out and get that. But please understand, if you or someone you know is in a domestic situation, a violent situation where they're feeling like they don't have an out, maybe because they're worried about their children, let me add some clarity. You're not alone. But let's also, while we're doing clarity, let's apply the definition as we need to do on each and every show. Domestic violence can be defined as a pattern of behavior in any relationship that is used to gain or maintain power and control over an intimate partner. Abuse is physical, sexual, emotional, economic, psychological actions or threats of actions that influence another person. This includes any behaviors that frighten, intimidate, terrorize, manipulate, hurt, humiliate, blame, injure, or wound someone. Domestic violence can happen to anyone of any race, age, sexual orientation, religion, or gender. It can happen to couples who are married for years, living together, people who are dating. Domestic violence affects people of all socioeconomic backgrounds and education levels. If you or someone you know needs help, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline and get the support and help you need at 800-799-7233. 800-799-7233. The majority of domestic violence victims are women. 1 in 3 women report being physically or sexually abused by a husband or boyfriend at some point during their lives. Over 32 million Americans are affected by domestic violence every year. And I know this is hard for some of you brothers to hear, but domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women. The leading cause of injury to women. Not she's clumsy, not she fell down the stairs. Y'all need to get all that stuff that some of y'all sisters say, I bumped my head, I did this, and stop lying. Just stop. It's time to pull the covers off. This has been a dark topic for a lot of years. I'm not going to have to point a finger at anyone because I truly believe by my faith, all that stuff that's happened in the dark will come to this light. 619-639-4747. 619-639-4747. That's the number if you have an idea, a thought, or perspective you'd like to share with the masses here. This is A Time to Heal. I'm Vinnie Moore. We're going to start wrapping this thing down. And you heard a lot today from the women. brothers, I'm calling you out. Yeah, and I know I've been calling you out all week long. It's not going to stop until we make better choices. We have to make better choices. We, the brothers, okay? And all that about why didn't she leave? Yeah, and forgive me, it's one of those, your shoulders drop, your heart drops. Yeah, you've heard it said many times, you know, when she got in that situation, jumped off, why didn't she leave? Once a family member has become steeped in the cycle of violence, mother and children exist in a constant high adrenaline state of fight, flight, or even freeze. It becomes biologically more difficult to make decisions. You know, it's harder to see exits and believe in your own ability to find safety, a lot like the deer caught in headlights and unable to move. These patterns are in full effect whether or not you're actually hit directly. Children who witness, hear, or are in any way aware of the danger to their mothers know instinctively that their own safety is also at risk. Like prey scurrying for the burrow when a predator is on the prowl, they understand that everyone's safety is threatened. This isn't anything new. And, yeah, I'd love to say that someone has just come up with a cure for domestic violence. I wish it were that simple. There's a letter written from an 8-year-old girl I want to share with you. No name given for obvious reasons, but I just want to share it. The letter says, I would try and be nice and not get into trouble. I tried to be very good so that he would not scream at her and do bad things to her. I tried to avoid him by not talking back and coming home early to stay out of his way. It worked most of the time, but when I made a mistake, then he would scream at my mommy and say everything was her fault. He would call her useless and that she is not worth anything. He would yell at mom. Then he would blame me and my younger sister, saying it's all your fault that we are fighting. Wow. Got a letter from a 12-year-old. It says, when your dad is mad, you feel weak and can't do anything. You're just stuck to the ground, confused, helpless, and you can't act right. You think it's your fault he is mad, even though it's not your fault. That's from the 12-year-old. 10-year-old chimes in and says, Dad's face was all grumpy, so I knew he was about to scream or throw things at my mom. After that, my dad went with me to the beach and helped me swim. I felt happy then, but I also remember the scary times too. Sometimes Dad is safe, and when he's not safe, it's hard to describe. That's from the 10-year-old. The stories are ever endearing, and unfortunately, the stories are still going on. Someone is living that reality right now. I don't have the number in front of me right now, but it's to the effect of a woman is abused every 9 seconds. That means in the 1-hour show, some of you all can do the math faster than I can, this has gone on numerous times, even in the essence of this show and other shows nationwide, bringing light to this dark topic and this dark subject. So what do you think we should do as a society, as a people, as a locale? What can you do to bring awareness of this? You know, what coping measures can you bring to the table that will help someone understand, you know, that they have options? You know, yesterday we shared a bunch of things on what you can do in certain situations, and I know I'm going to probably go over a little bit today, and you know, and I think it's important that maybe we do that, if for nothing more than to lend some clarity on how people can simply help. You know, I shared it yesterday, but I want to share it again, and I'm not going to worry about running over. So the live stream will probably end soon, but you can always play back and hear the whole thing. So how do you help? Number one, don't be afraid to let the person involved know that you're concerned about their safety. Number two, acknowledge that he or she is in a very difficult and scary situation. Let them know that the abuse is not their fault. Reassure them that him or her, that they are not alone and that there is help and support. Number three, be supportive. Listen to your friend or family member, whoever it is. Remember that it may be difficult for them to talk about the abuse. Number four, be non-judgmental. And I know for some of y'all that's really, really hard. But respect your friends or family members' decisions, even if you don't agree with them. There may be many reasons why victims stay in those relationships. He or she may leave and return to the relationship many times. Don't criticize them. Don't try to guilt them. They need your support. Encourage him or her to participate in activities outside the relationship with friends and family. And again, when isolation is involved, that one can be very, very difficult. Number six, if he or she ends the relationship, you must continue to be supportive of them. Even though the relationship was abusive, your friend or family member may still feel sad and lonely once it is over. He or she will need time to mourn the loss of the relationship and will especially need your support at that time. Next, help him or her develop a safety plan. Beyond that, encourage him or her to talk to people who can provide help and guidance. Find a local domestic violence agency that provides counseling or support groups. Offer to go with them. If he or she has to go to the police, a court, or lawyer, offer to go along for moral support. And remember, you can't rescue him or her. Although it is difficult to see someone that you care about get hurt, ultimately the person getting hurt has to be the one to decide that they want to do something about it. It's important for you to support him or her and help them find their way to safety and peace. And that's our show for today. We thank you all for this week of support and for chiming in, whether it's through chatting or calls or otherwise. I want you to keep the number at hand, 619-639-4747. My name is Vinnie Moore. I've been married for 16 years. I've never called my wife out of her name, and I've never raised a hand to her. I'm proud of that, and I'm not perfect. And I realize the world that we live in is far from that. But I also realize that the children who see me every single day, my kids, their friends, they're watching. They're watching all of us, and they're watching how I comport myself. They're watching how I carry myself. So I get to assess as often as I can, am I showing that love and that peace that I preach every single day on these airways? I'd like to believe that I am. And I thank you for this opportunity and this week. We'll see you this weekend with the Fastest 60 Minutes in Sports. We're going to have some fun on Sunday with everything going on in the world of sports. And then, unless something else changes, we'll see you next Monday for A Time to Heal. Take care, everybody. Have a good night.